you, Zoom Lady.
Yeah, happy holidays, Zoom Lady.
Happy holidays.
Yes, and happy holidays to everybody. Hello again. We are here, and I fully had a whole speech for this that I was coming up with in my head when I was walking around earlier today, and you know, it just went all out the window, but that's okay. I think what I would just want to say off the top of my head at this point is, once again, always thanking you guys for listening, and I guess, you know, before I get any further, I should probably just have everyone say hi really quickly. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I remembered, but yeah. Yeah, but thank you, everyone, for listening to us and keep following along with all the things that we do. As usual, it really means a lot. And I know that this has been an absolutely bonkers year, and I feel like we've been saying that every year for like the past 5 years now, but you know what? It's fine. With all the crazy chaotic things that happened, I'm just really hoping that, you know, ourselves included in this group here, we can just spend the holidays being with the people who we care about most in our lives and just being thankful for the good things, the happy things. Yeah. Now let's do a script regarding murder. Yeah!
Yes! Murder the happy things story. Including murder.
Nothing says Christmas like murder.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it. So yes, we have a holiday special for you guys where the theme is murder. It's you know us. It's not going to be... we're not a true crime podcast here.
Unless.
No. Hello, this is Editor Jess from the future. I just wanted to say really quickly that we had a couple of substitutions with characters, and we have me playing Carlton and Maria covered for Miriam. Yay! So we're gonna just do what we always do and jump right in. And I hope you enjoy our presentation of heinous investigations in Murder on the Polar Express. So, it's the holiday season again, and this time we find our investigators on a train, but not just any train, a train that runs express to the North Pole, if only there is a name indicative of that. The investigators sit in a plush, cozy dining car, enjoying an impressively holiday-themed meal together.
Man, it sure was nice of old Saint Nick to invite us up to celebrate the holidays at his place. And the luxury train ride through this picturesque Arctic landscape is super thoughtful. But I wouldn't expect anything less from a master gift giver.
Oh yeah, no complaints here. I could get used to this kind of comfort.
And how is this any different than what we get at Martin's place?
This time it's festive.
As if to emphasize his point, he raises a fancy glass of mulled wine and takes a long sip. Right. I'll say, based on this invitation Mr. Kringle sent us, this train is magical in nature. Apparently, many of the cars have one kind of fantastic wonder or another in it.
Yes! Is dinner over yet? I want to go to the other cars right now!
Me too! Imagine the thaumaturgical studies we could make.
I know, right? Hey, do you think Santa would be mad if I took massive samples of magical matter from this train?
I would suggest that you exercise some restraint in that regard, Frank. Although the prospect of research is still exhilarating, we could at least organize some very thorough journals. How about you geniuses take it slow? You know we get in over our heads with magic more often than not.
Oh, stop being such a Scrooge. This is supposed to be a fun trip. We should be enjoying it. Look at Ginny. She's been enjoying the view for most of the ride so far.
I can't help it. The Aurora is so beautiful. I wish we could do this all the time.
Me too. It's not often enough we get a moment's peace.
And wouldn't you know it, the train suddenly starts to shake and the lights flicker on and off and on and off, like that episode of SpongeBob, before blacking out entirely. Jack needs to stop tempting fate.
I'm starting to think Carlton had a point.
And from the darkness appears a ghost, specifically one that looks like a railroad conductor, circa 1950-ish.
Hello there.
Hey, you guys. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say this train is haunted.
Yes, sorry about the dramatic entrance. I've been here so long that I'm used to it, but I forget that that isn't the case for everyone.
Believe me, we're used to it too. You said you've been here a long time?
Yes, decades actually. Being a ghost hasn't stopped me from keeping this train running. At this point, I'm not sure anything would.
Right, so I'm guessing that means old Yeti Claws knows this train is haunted?
Yes.
And he still let us come here.
You know, I think this letter he asked me to give you would explain things better.
The ghost conductor summons a letter from the ether, and it floats down into Martin's hands. Martin takes it and starts to read.
Dear Heinous Investigations, I apologize for not being entirely honest with my motivations for inviting you here. The truth is, one night, 75 years ago, my friend Hank...
Yes, that's me. Hello.
Oh, yes, hello. Pleasure to meet you. Hank suffered a mysterious death on this very train where he served as conductor, and his spirit still does to this day. He doesn't remember the circumstances of his passing, but I have a suspicion of foul play. I'm so grateful for the loyalty and goodwill Hank has shown after all this time, and I hoped that I could give him the gift of finding someone who can finally help him move on. Warm regards, Santa Claus.
The investigators stand in shock for a moment, but not for much longer.
Did we just get duped by Santa?
Looks like it.
I feel used.
I think we all do. I've got to hand it to the big guy, though. Never thought he'd ever pull off this level of subterfuge. Considering that he's been able to convince much of the world's population to question his very existence, I actually find it, don't find it so hard to believe.
Why does it matter how he got us here? Santa is counting on us to help Hank. We should do it.
Yeah, and you heard what the letter said. Suspicion of foul play. Santa wants us to solve a murder.
No way! Didn't we all just agree that this trip was supposed to be fun? We did not sign up to solve any murders.
Why don't we just ask Hank what he wants? Hank?
Well, this job is my life. Afterlife. I'm actually pretty happy here, all things considered. Although it would be nice to put a stop to the constant existential dread that I feel due to the lack of closure about the end of my mortal existence.
There is a pause as the investigators inevitably let their goodness get the best of them.
Aw, you poor thing. We won't let you suffer anymore. Ghosts are people too. Well, sort of.
Now, far be it from me to turn down the chance to help someone in need and solve a good mystery while we're at it. Let's do this. How do we do this?
Like we usually do. We'll split up and look for whatever evidence we can find. If this murder really did happen 75 years ago, there probably isn't much left. But then again, this is a magic train, and it's not like we have anything else to lose. Let's do what we can and meet back here in the dining car in an hour.
Sounds like a plan, boss lady. Not to worry, friendly NPC. We'll solve this mystery and free your soul, no problem.
And so the investigators venture further into the train. Rachel and Benji, chaperoned by a very protective Orville, enter a car to find a snowy winter wonderland, the centerpiece of which is a maze made entirely of ice.
Wow, this is going to be the most fun murder investigation ever!
Race you to the scary looming ice maze!
The two of them make a mad dash for the maze, with Orville doing his best to keep up.
I'm questioning the decision to let you two be a part of this.
At the entrance of the maze, the kids stop short.
Wait, do you think we'll actually find any clues in there?
My vast knowledge of fairy tales makes me want to say yes.
We can't go in there. The ground is too slippery. You could get hurt.
Oh, I have an idea.
In the next moment, the junior investigators and Orville are wearing ice skates.
Fine, let's go.
Yay!
Woo!
The trio skate. Oh my god.
The trio skate their way through the maze. but after several minutes of following twists and turns, they slow down, sensing something sinister in the air.
Is it just me, or did we pass that dead end already?
We did. There's the tracks our skates made in the ice.
We've been going in circles.
From nearby, they hear a soft, barely audible scraping sound. They quickly turn to see that one of the walls of the maze is moving. Then another wall also starts to move, and then another. Then the two walls surrounding the junior investigators and Orville start to close in, threatening to squash them like snowflakes.
I think we should skate away from here as fast as we can.
Or I could do this.
Orville levitates himself, Rachel, and Benji over and out of the ever-shifting maze. They land safely in a nearby snowdrift.
Whew! That was a close one. I guess this was one of those unrewarding prison-type mazes. Not cool.
From nearby, they hear a strange voice.
Nah, not cool.
The investigators turn around to see a talking snowman, like something right out of a Rankin Bass Bass Christmas special.
Sorry, were you not anticipating seeing a talking snowman on the magical Christmas train?
It's on my list of possibilities.
Do you know what's going on with the maze?
Yeah, it's all because of the ghost conductor. Not that he means it. I know old Hank since he first showed up on the train, but as nice as he is, it's not enough to lay his soul to rest. And the haunting's affecting the train, turning the magic in the car sour. Hence the deadly maze.
So now this isn't just about helping Hank, but about saving the whole train, too?
And ourselves, since we're the ones riding it. The stakes have been raised!
Apparently.
Thinks for a moment, then turns to the snowman.
You said you've known the conductor a long time?
Yes.
Any chance you saw anything the night he died?
Meanwhile, in another train car, Jack and Jenny find a music room with seemingly every instrument imaginable.
Oh, I'm glad we ended up with this car. You could make a whole symphony in here. And look at the roof!
What roof?
They both look up where the roof of the car should be, but are instead greeted by the illusion of a night sky full of stars.
Well, whatever you want to call it, it's so sublime. If we weren't looking for clues, I would spend all night here.
Yeah. Speaking of, I'm not so sure we'll find anything useful in a music room.
He skims through some sheet music on a nearby stand.
Maybe if we play something?
He picks up a trumpet, flips to the first page of the music for Silent Night, and starts playing. The melody immediately fills the air, and the stars shine even brighter than before, seeming to dance through the illusory sky.
It looks like the stars are trying to show us something. Keep playing, Jack.
He nods and continues to play, and the stars come together and arrange themselves into a picture of the train.
Oh, it's like the Starlight Express. Maybe there aren't any clues in this car, but the stars are trying to point us to where we can find some.
Jenny suddenly looks very drowsy.
And I hope we find them soon, because I'm getting tired. Jack?
Jack is barely keeping hold of the trumpet as he also starts to nod off.
Oh, you're tired too. Is it later than we thought? Wait, no, this isn't right. We were okay when we came in here before you. It's the music! It's the music! Jack! Jack, stop!
Jack, extremely dazed, tries to speak while still playing. Jenny runs over to him.
But
burr.
We need the
burr.
The stars
burr.
To tell us where to go.
We can't go anywhere if we're asleep.
Jack, unable to stay awake any longer, passes out and drops the trumpet. The music stops, but the star train fades away.
Oh no!
She goes to the sleeping Jack, quickly shaking off her own sleepiness. She gently places a hand on Jack's shoulder and tries to nudge him awake.
Jack, wake up! Come on! Rise and shine!
No response. Jenny shakes him a little harder.
Jack, quick! Algy is trying to steal your clothes so he doesn't have to do laundry again!
Still nothing. She fully grabs Jack and floats herself in the air, now fully shaking him like a rag doll.
Wake up now, please!
But Jack is still out like a light. Jenny floats back down to the ground and lies down next to him, arms crossed in frustration.
now what I'm supposed to... What am I supposed to do? I can't wake Jack up, and I can't get the stars back. I can't even play any of these instruments. Okay, I can, but not well. It'd end up sounding messy and loud and... Oh!
She quickly runs over to a tuba, picks it up, takes a deep breath, and stops.
Oh, wait.
She sets the tuba down and takes a moment to dig through her pockets, pulling out a pair of big, fluffy, homemade earmuffs.
I was going to give these to Orville when we got to the North Pole as an early Christmas present, but I don't think he'll mind if I test them out first. Okay, here goes.
She picks the tuba back up, takes a breath, and blows into it, resulting in a god-awful, deep, dank sound. She then runs over to a violin and makes sounds on it akin to nails on a chalkboard. She proceeds to run between all the instruments, playing them all badly to the point of unleashing symphonic hell from nearby Jacksters.
Ugh, what noise is that? I feel like my ears are bleeding.
Ginny drops the instruments.
Jack, thank goodness. I'm glad that worked. So, do you think we can play that song again, but with these on?
She holds out the earmuffs to him.
Sure. But what about you?
I'll know to cover my ears this time. Now let's get that star train back.
Jack doesn't argue and puts the earmuffs on, prepared to find their clue. Meanwhile, Martin and Algie open the door to another car containing a fancy kitchen that is definitely too large to fit on a train.
Okay, so I guess this murder mystery isn't all bad.
He immediately hones in on the food in the room and starts snacking. You're still hungry? We just had dinner.
Yeah, we had to run off on this investigation before I could get to have seconds.
Well, you can do what you like, but I'll be looking for clues.
Martin slowly moves about the room, leaving no pot or pan unturned, even though he is probably taking it too far. Case in point, he is looking inside every jar, bag, and box within the pantry.
You know, I highly doubt we're going to find the answers we're looking for at the bottom of a jar of cranberry sauce. But when you're done with it, can you pass it over?
I was only trying to be thorough, but I see your point. Here.
He hands Algie the jar and returns to checking the pantry, running his hands along the shelves before abruptly stopping.
Hey, I think there's something back here.
Where?
Here, wedged behind this shelf. I think it's a piece of paper, all folded up. Definitely meant to be hidden. Got it.
He pulls the paper from its hiding place and carefully unfolds it.
The paper looks pretty old, and the ink is faded. A good start, but let's see what it says.
He starts to read.
Darling, every moment without you is like a star. I forgot how dramatic this is.
Let me get the sax.
Okay. Darling, every moment without you is like wandering across a glacier in a blizzard. Empty, disorienting, lifeless. I miss your bright eyes and your warm, gentle smile. I cannot wait for our next meeting. I want to feel your lips brush against mine, be overwhelmed by the taste of... Maybe I should skip ahead. Oh, on second thought, it only gets more explicit from there. Oh boy.
Let me take a look at that. When it comes to especially spicy letters, I am the expert.
He reads through the note as a professor would read an academic text.
Yes, very interesting. Ooh. Yeah, whoever wrote this was down bad.
The letter is signed C. No other name. I wonder who they could be and if they factored into this case somehow. Maybe this letter led to some kind of romantic rendezvous that came to a nasty end. And Hank was somehow involved. Algie, I think we could be onto something. And you're back to eating the leftovers from dinner.
Well, I'm not gonna let it go to waste!
Martin shakes his head and continues to look over the letter before shifting in discomfort.
Whew, is it just me or has it gotten much hotter in here all of a sudden?
He takes a look around the car and notices that not only has most of the kitchen disappeared, but that the heat is so intense it can be seen in the air.
Algie, I think we should go.
But I'm not done yet.
Martin knocks the plate out of his hands and grabs him by the arm.
Hey!
Martin tries to drag Algie out the door, but they end up in a scuffle.
Algie, we have to move. Something isn't right here.
Okay. Don't get your fancy pants in a bunch. Do what you want if you just let go.
They both end up tripping and falling over. Ah! They land in a strange, soft, questionably colored substance.
Oh, what is this stuff? I know for a fact it wasn't here when we came in.
He scoops up a small amount of the substance with his finger and tastes it.
Why would you do that?
It's pastry and fruit mints.
What if it wasn't? You know, don't even bother answering. I'm out of here. Oh, never mind. I'm stuck too.
Yeah, me too. To make matters worse, enormous gas flames shoot up from the corners of the room, making the car resemble a giant oven. All right, I'm going out on a limb here and say, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we're about to be baked into a giant pie.
Oh, how delightful. Just in time for the holidays. How do we stop it?
I'm thinking. Any chance you're still hungry?
Well, now that our lives depend on it, I don't know, maybe?
Then let's eat for our lives. Martin has barely taken two bites when Algie has eaten through enough pie to free them both. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Now let's run for it.
They make a break for the exit, just managing to escape before the gas fire consumes the inside of the car. They both catch their breath. Well, that was horrifying. He pulls the letter out of his pocket, is completely unscathed. Good thing I was able to hold on to this, huh, Algie? If you made a noise, it ate you. As Algie faints, Frank, Elliot, and Liza prepare to enter another train car.
Okay, guys, I know we haven't found any evidence yet, but I have a good feeling about this one.
Well, while I'm glad to help a lost soul find some closure, I hope that whatever we find doesn't convey the worst.
Oh, I wouldn't worry, little buddy. This is a holiday special. I'm sure that nobody else has run into anything too sinister, so we won't either.
Frank opens the door to reveal that the car is full of creepy puppets and dolls. Elliot jumps into Frank's arms in abject terror.
How would you look at that? Are these toys all handmade? Maybe this is like a mobile workshop so Santa can take his work on the road. Ooh, I gotta get a closer look. Down you go, buddy.
No, wait. Oof.
As Elliot hits the ground, Liza reaches down to him.
Need a hand?
Oh, yes, thank you, Miss Liza. My, what a charming car this is.
You can say creepy, Elliot. We're on the same page. At least Frank is having fun.
Frank is sitting at a workbench in one corner of the car, marveling at all of the spooky dolls.
Wow! The craftsmanship on these things is beyond impressive! And this workbench is so whimsical and somehow cozy. And it smells like nutmeg!
Maybe we should try to approach this like he is. Let's see if there are any clues hidden among these toys that can do nothing harmful to us.
Yes, quite.
Liza starts searching around, behind, and under piles of dolls, while Elliot tries to do the same, just much more slowly and with a lot more trembling. As he tries to look in a drawer, a nearby marionette slips and appears to lurch forward at Elliot.
Oh.
Elliot jumps into a surprised Liza's arms. They look at each other for a moment, blushing.
I'll just get down now.
Oh, yeah, totally. Go right ahead.
As Elliot gets down, Liza reaches for the semi-fallen marionette, planning to move it back in place, but then she notices something.
Hey, there's something stuck down the back of this puppet's shirt.
She reaches for the strange object.
Be careful, Miss Liza.
She nods as she grabs hold of the item and pulls it swiftly and easily from the puppet. It's a knife covered in dried blood.
Oh, God!
She nearly drops the knife in surprise but manages to hold on to it. She looks at it intently, as do Elliot and a suddenly engaged Frank.
I think I just found something really incriminating.
I should say so.
Huh. Funny to find that kind of knife in a toy-making spot. It looks like it belongs in a kitchen, not a workshop. Seems suspicious.
I'm a little more concerned about the blood all over it. Elliot, any chance we'd be able to find out whose it is?
Well, by the look of it, this blood is too old to be properly tested, even if I had the means to do so. Not to mention, it isn't as if there are blood samples from everyone on board the train the night of Hank's passing readily available for comparison.
Yeah, and I haven't met a ghost yet who could give a blood sample. At least, not of their own blood. Ugh.
Well, regardless of the source of the blood, there is still something to discern from this weapon. I've seen several types of blood spatter in my day, and the pattern here indicates that this knife wasn't used to stab with murderous intent, but to slash. This was a defensive strike.
Maybe Hank used it to fight back against the killer! If we bring the knife back to the dining car, then maybe...
Liza trails off to see Frank and Elliot looking at her, the former with fascination, the latter with concern.
What are you guys staring at?
Your hair.
What's wrong with my hair?
Nothing, nothing, but, has it always been so... yarnish?
What?
She nervously runs her hands through her hair to find that it is now made of yarn.
What the...
Not to cause any further alarm, but it appears that my arm has been petrified.
Elliot is clearly freaked out by this development, and Frank takes a minute to knock on his buddy's frozen arm.
Wood! Between this and Liza's hair, you'd think you guys were starting to resemble the dolls in here! Yeah, that's definitely what's happening. This place is cursed! Ouch!
Frank jumps and reaches behind his back to find a wind-up key sticking out.
Yeah, we should run.
Yeah, we should. Move it, nerds!
Liza secures the knife in her belt, grabs hold of Frank and Elliot, and quickly drags them out of the train car, slamming the door shut behind them. They look themselves over to see that they've returned to normal.
So I guess this is a dark holiday special. My bad!
Meanwhile, Carlton and Miriam enter another train car, which is a completely normal sleeping car.
Well, that's disappointing. I was hoping we'd get one of the magic cars.
What, and find more ghosts? I think we should stick to the level of crazy we're already at. Even if it would have been cool to have an ice dragon or something around. I don't know, I haven't thought that much about it.
Sure. Come on, Sir Yells a Lot. Let's check out these rooms.
She goes over to a door, preparing to open it, but stops. She turns to Carlton.
You want to do your thing?
Seriously? Oh, sorry, that was Elliot. Seriously? I thought you said it was stupid.
It is, but it's also the holidays. Knock yourself out.
Oh, okay, sure. Thanks, Briar.
Door kicking sound. He kicks the door open. The fact that it's a sliding door makes the action even more impressive.
Nice one. Now let's get searching.
They begin to dig through the various compartments of the room, as well as any other spots where clues might be hidden. As Miriam searches near the doorway, she hears a rustling from behind her, causing her to turn around quickly. There is nothing behind her, but something still doesn't sit right.
Hey, Carlton, I think I heard something. Out in the hallway.
You gonna go check it out? Need backup?
Maybe. Just stay quiet and wait for my signal.
Carlton nods as Miriam brandishes a small throwing club and takes a stealthy step back out into the hallway, immediately freezing as she sees what looks like a stereotypical railway hobo, or at least what one would look like if they were covered from head to toe. She stands confused for a moment before taking on a defensive stance and focusing on the stranger.
Hello?
The stranger turns around, and as they spot Miriam, they bolt for the nearest door.
Hey, wait! Stop!
She aims the club and prepares to throw, but then Carlton bumps into her.
Prior, oof!
Ugh!
She fumbles the club and then steadies herself.
Come on, they went that way. Second door from the exit.
She runs after the stranger with Carlton following.
I thought I told you to wait for my signal.
And I would've if you bothered to tell me what the signal was.
Why would I need to tell you that? I only use, like, 3 different signals at most.
Ha! Bullcrap.
You know, now I regret letting you kick that door open.
Speaking of doors, Miriam flings the one leading into the stranger's hiding place open. But there's no one inside.
Where'd they go?
I don't know. You sure you picked the right door?
Suddenly, they hear the sound of another door opening in the hallway. They quickly do an about-face and run back into the hall, where they see the stranger run into a different door.
There, third door, right side. We'll get him this time.
They run after the stranger again, and what ensues is a hallway door chase scene straight out of Scooby-Doo. Carlton, Miriam, and the stranger are popping in and out of doors left and right, including ones that they logically shouldn't have been able to get to. Carlton and Miriam pause in the hallway mid-chase to catch their breath.
Okay, so maybe this car does have a little magic in it after all.
You think?
Then the stranger appears out of another door, and the pair springs up and runs after them again. The chaos continues for another few minutes before Miriam manages to tackle the stranger to the ground.
Finally caught you. Now, if you don't mind, we'd like you to answer some questions.
Yeah, like, what the hell are you doing here? And does it have anything to do with an old murder?
Back in the dining car, the other investigators reconvene.
All right. It looks like everyone is present and accounted for. Except for Carlton and Miriam, who texted, "Don't wait for us, making sure a railway hobo isn't also a murder hobo." Confusing message, but not entirely out of line with their antics. And this only shortly after Orville texted, "The train is haunted, proceed with caution."
A little late on the alert there, don't you think?
How would I know? We were split up.
My point is, things on this train are only going to get stranger until we solve this case. Time is of the essence.
He looks around the car and calls out,
"Hank, are you still here? Or at least able to hear us from elsewhere?"
The lights in the car go wild again as Hank appears.
Hello again.
Hello again. So it seems like we've all managed to find some evidence pertaining to your death, but given the enormous time lapse, I'm not sure how much we'll be able to put together. I'm hoping at the very least we can help jog your memory in some way.
Oh gosh, I'm just happy you all put yourselves in danger for me. By the way, I'm really sorry about the cursed train cars. I swear I did not know that was happening.
We know. The snowman told us.
Snowman?
Yes, in the ice maze car. And he told us that all those years ago, Santa invited some friends and family for a visit, just like he invited us. Except everybody on the train that night was magical. Yetis and fairies and stuff like that. But where it gets really mysterious is that one of the guests, who was a Barbagazi...
Barbie, what's it?
Barbagazi, a snow-dwelling person of Swiss and French folklore.
Think somewhere between a gnome and a yeti.
And not the monsters from The Witcher.
Right. Anyway, the snowman said he was pretty sure this Barbagazi was related to Santa, like a cousin or something. But even more importantly, the snowman saw them sneak off into one of the train cars after Hank.
Aha! A suspect.
Sorry. Oh, good. Great, even. Did you come across anything that might establish motive or means, Orville?
No. Sorry.
I might be able to help with that. When Elliot, Frank, and I were in the workshop car, we found this knife.
Liza brandishes the knife in a way that she didn't intend to be just a little creepy.
Oh, why wasn't our clue this cool?
Can I hold it?
Oh, so that's where that knife went.
You recognize it?
Only that it's supposed to be in the kitchen, not the workshop.
Called it!
No idea how it ended up so far from where it was supposed to be. Do you think the knife is what killed me?
No. We have extremely strong cause to believe that it was used in a defensive capacity only.
Okay.
Well, what about a crime scene? Any luck there?
Oh, Jack and I know that. The murder happened in the caboose.
It might have happened in the caboose. Don't forget, we're going off of a weird, vague sign from a bunch of stars.
Yeah, but for most of our cases, the weird and vague stuff is usually correct.
She has a point. Hank, you've been running this train all this time. Did you ever get any strange impressions from the caboose or any of the train cars, for that matter?
Nuh-uh.
This is proving to be as difficult as I thought.
Then how about we switch gears? Like, asking the conductor here if he knows anything about a letter? Specifically a particularly lewd love letter?
Elsie accusingly holds the letter up for the investigators and Hank to see.
Jacuzzi.
How do you get...
How did you get that? I was holding on to that letter. Have you been reading it this whole time?
For investigative reasons.
Wait, I actually do remember this.
He looks down at the letter, reaches for it, but much like his memory, the paper slips through his fingers.
Do you know who this C person is?
I don't. Or maybe I do? One thing I know for certain is that whoever they are, they didn't kill me.
How can you be so sure?
I don't know. I just am.
What if C wrote the letter for you? And that Barbagazi, what if they were the third side of an unrequited love triangle? And spurned by the object of their affection, they attacked Hank in a jealous rage. Hank used the knife in self-defense, but it wasn't enough. He fell victim to a crime of passion.
Ginny, I love you, but I think we need to stop spending every date night watching period dramas.
And, on a less personal note, if those really were the circumstances surrounding Hank's death, what would have happened to C? The killer wouldn't leave a witness to the crime, but then C, very likely, would have also become a ghost like Hank.
Then that can't be true, because I know for a fact that I've been the only ghost on this train for the last 75 years.
Okay, so the bloody knife isn't the murder weapon. It wasn't a crime of passion, and we don't even know if our one suspect had anything to do with the murder at all? Man, we're quickly running out of tropes here.
It is at this moment that Liza has a sudden thought.
Wait a minute. Can I see that letter from Santa again? The one Hank gave us?
Of course. He hands Liza the letter. Why? Liza looks over the letter with hawk-like intensity. Her face lights up as she turns the letter around to show the rest of the group.
See? I have suspicion of foul play. Santa didn't have any more solid evidence of a murder than we have now. Maybe that's because there was never any murder at all.
Huh?
Okay, so the knife came from the kitchen, but it was stashed in the workshop. But why would it be stashed at all if it wasn't the murder weapon? Maybe because whoever hid it was afraid that it would be mistaken for one. Because they knew that there would be a letter connecting them to their recently deceased lover.
See?
Exactly. There was already someone following Hank through the train. If C was caught with a knife and the conductor's dead body, they would have a hard time exonerating themselves.
Because nobody would believe what the knife was really used for.
You mean self-defense, like the doc said.
Or to defend someone else.
Yes, I knew it. Romance wins the day.
I think I'm missing something here.
But you won't be for long. I think we've solved this case, but I have one more suspicion that, if correct, will prove everything beyond a shadow of a doubt. But for that, we have to go
to the scene of the crime!
The investigators and their ghostly client rush to the caboose of the train, where they find Carlton, Miriam, and their mysterious captive waiting.
Hello, Miriam, Carlton. Thanks for meeting us here. Any chance your new friend was able to confirm our story? Well, I mean, yeah, but it's definitely as wild as you said it'd be.
Maybe we should just let him explain everything himself.
Miriam nudges the stranger encouragingly, and he removes some of his getup to show his face, which is framed by soft white fur. He locks eyes with an astonished Hank.
Hello, Hank.
Odd.
Otherwise known as C, from the letter. And I assume the one who the snowman saw following Hank?
Yes. We'd been together for some time by then. That train ride 75 years ago was supposed to end with us telling our family and friends the good news.
That's right. But then I... Claude, I'm sorry. I can't believe I forgot.
But you didn't. You knew I didn't hurt you, even if you couldn't remember why. And maybe it was better that way.
What? No, why would you think that?
I believe that this is where Miss Liza's theory comes in. Something must have endangered Claude that night. And you, Hank, were determined to protect him.
Even if it cost you your life. That was pretty heroic of you.
It was more than heroic.
Frank leans in toward Elliot and whispers.
Ooh, I think I smell a dramatic monologue coming!
When I was on my way to board the train that night, I was spotted by some people in a remote town nearby. A town that apparently was extremely superstitious and had never seen a Baba Ghazi before. You can guess that some of the people there didn't take it well. I managed to get away from the mob and onto the train with Hank, but they tracked us down. I wanted to fight them off, but Hank wouldn't let me. He was afraid I'd get hurt. And we both knew that there were other magic folk on the train who'd need protecting too, even if they didn't know what was happening. Hank said it was his responsibility as a conductor to make sure we all made it to our destination safe. We waited until the train was crossing a great chasm and lured what was left of the mob to the caboose. Hank told me to hide, while he threatened them away with the knife. The blood you saw was from one of the few intruders who got too close. Watching Hank defend me like that, I don't think I ever felt so loved and even a little proud. I guess I was so distracted by it all, I didn't react fast enough when he fell. I swear I'd seen him handle every movement of the train 100 times. But maybe the extra stress of the fight threw him off balance. I ran out to the back of the car for him, but all I saw was the dark, empty chasm. Not even the mob he'd fought to protect me from had stuck around. He must have dropped the knife when it happened, because I found it on the floor by the doorway on my way back in. That's when I realized going off with the conductor only to be found with a bloody knife later was not a good look, and the one person who could have saved me was gone. I panicked, hid the knife in the workshop, and swore I'd never say anything beyond that Hank disappeared. I knew that if he'd still been around, he'd want me to protect myself. So imagine my surprise when I heard from Cousin Chris that Hank was still around, just with one slight difference.
Claude turns to Hank.
I felt like I couldn't face you. Not after hiding what happened that night from everyone. I was afraid.
Oh, Claude.
But then, when I heard from Chris about these heinous investigation... But then, when I heard from Chris about these heinous investigators being brought in to solve the mystery of your passing, I thought that I'd finally have a chance to make things right. So I stowed away on the train.
But then you hid from us.
And ran when we tried to talk to you.
I got nervous! I'm sorry for not coming to find you sooner, Hank. Can you ever forgive me?
If it means I won't lose you again, yes. Absolutely yes!
Aw. They embrace. Or at least they try to, considering one of them is still very much a ghost.
So this really was a love story.
And yet I think we can still confidently say mystery solved.
Does this mean we can go back to partying?
Algie. Okay, I'll admit, that actually sounds like a great idea.
The investigators go back to the dining car to celebrate, noticing that the train has returned to its normal, safe, and festive self along the way. They spend the rest of the evening finally getting a well-deserved rest.
Wow, this is the best hot chocolate I've ever had!
I wouldn't expect anything less from a train run by Santa. Hank, do you think we could get the recipe?
Oh, sure. After everything you did for me, not to mention old Santa Boss when he gets the good news, it's the least I could do.
Thanks, but are we sure that's really the best move? From nearby, Algie and Ginny are engaged in what appears to be a drinking contest. They each chug a huge mug of hot chocolate each, and then slam the mugs down on the table in front of them.
Hell yeah! How many mugs is that? 10? 12? I'm losing count! Woo! This stuff is good!
So good! And you don't need to count anymore because I'm gonna win anyway! Oh, and Orville's keeping score!
Can someone explain again how I ended up judging this?
Well, it's not like we could have asked Jack!
Algie points over to Jack, who is asleep.
Oh no! The sleep curse got him again! Don't worry, Jack! I'll save you!
She grabs two of the hot chocolate mugs and bangs them together next to Jack's ear.
Ah! Ginny, I'm fine. Just tired, I swear.
Oops. Sorry.
few tables over, Liza and Martin unwrap an extremely well-decorated gift basket to reveal a bottle of a certain wine and sugar cookies decorated like a familiar crustacean.
Champagne and lobster cookie fest! Thank you, Santa!
Now this is how you celebrate a job well done. Martin pours himself and Liza their drinks and raises his glass. Cheers.
And happy holidays.
They clink. Clink.
Anybody else want some?
No thank you, Miss Liza. But I appreciate the sentiment.
I'll try some.
Benji!
I meant the cookies!
Oh, yes, that makes much more sense. Sorry. Frank, would you like anything?
I'm good, little buddy. The day is saved. Everything is nice and cozy. There's plenty of holiday cheer to go around. Feels like the best wrap-up to a murder mystery anyone could have asked for. I'm A-okay.
You want to go back to the magical train cars, don't you?
Yes!
Ooh, I'm in too!
And me! I want to see the car with all the dolls in it!
Maybe we wait a bit before revisiting that one.
Here we go again. Happy holidays.
The end. And a happy heinous holidays to us all. Yay!
Or as we like to call them...
And don't we just.
Very nice.
Don't we
just... Well, yes, that and that was Murder on the Polar Express. Thank you all for listening. And really, happy holidays to everyone. Happy heinous holidays. Say goodbye.
Happy heinous holidays, everyone.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Goodbye. Should all the acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot?
I don't even want to listen to this anymore.
Auld Lang Syne.
Bye.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you guys. It was good seeing you.